It's 4 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 6 o'clock in Chicago, and it's 7 p.m. in New York City. Hello, everybody. I'm Mad Dog Scipio, and you are joined once again by America's Bobcast. What's the buzz tonight? She's back. I tried to get rid of her. She's back. Amelia, the Pitbull Chapman. How are you, Amelia?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Why did you show up this week?
I was sick. Remember?
You were supposed to stay sick.
Oh, well, thanks a lot.
I miss you. Are you clear to do the show? Did your doctor clear you to do the show?
Yeah, no more.
Because I have a very special guest, and I don't want you getting the man sick, okay?
Yeah.
Because he's a really important entertainment manager. He's a, kind of a big deal around here.
I'll try not to cough on him.
On top of being my new best friend, he's a Jersey boy.
Right.
And he lives in my neighborhood. Which is beautiful.
Yeah.
So, this is WWGF Radio 88.7 on the broadband radio system, BRS globally. We are live around the world and on a 1 hour delay in the rest of the world. Canada, anyway.
Right.
We're on a 1 hour delay in Canada. I want to welcome a new station, WQRS, in Biloxi, Mississippi. We are on, on Biloxi, WQRS, FM 71. 71.5. Listen to this one. 71.5. Crazy. We get them all over the dial. Are you, Amelia, trivia question. What do you think the highest number on the dial is that we're on? You're going to laugh when I tell you.
105?
No. Believe it or not, we're on the AM broadband in Europe on 1080.
Wow.
Yeah. On 1080.
That is
crazy.
Awesome.
That's like, you could like pull in the fillings in your teeth on that level. Craziness.
Well,
I have a special guest. I want to introduce my guest. But by way of introducing him, let me tell you about this. Mm-hmm. His name is Rick Sapphire. And if you know that name, well, then he's a heavy hitter in the world of entertainment. Rick Sapphire has accomplished something that few people in entertainment have. He's been truly labeled, and you've heard this before, the manager to the stars, right? You've heard that everybody's the manager to the stars. Well, Rick Sapphire can prove it with people like Jerry Lewis, Mickey Rooney, Sir John Mills, Margot Kidder, Rip Taylor, who I knew Rip. Chris Noel, Terry Moore, Jerry Mathers, who I knew, did a show with him. Betsy Palmer, Anna Maria Alberghetti, Anson Williams, Happy Days. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. We're talking about the Little Rascals, Spanky McFarlane, Darla Hood. Oh, my God. Chubby Checker, a Philly guy right here. Mm-hmm. Charlie Callis, the late Charlie Callis. One of the funniest people yet, and nicest guys, too, by the way. Great, great guy, Charlie Callis. My guest is the author of an amazing book, The Real Jerry Lewis. He is celebrity entertainment super manager, Rick Sapphire. Rick, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
I don't want to interrupt. That was the greatest introduction I ever had.
Yes, congratulations. Welcome to the show.
As a matter of fact, my price just went up.
Absolutely.
That's right.
That's what we do here. We drive the market straight through the roof, brother.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you. No, it's very nice. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. I've been looking forward to this. People who watch this show know we've done several shows recently in the last probably Amelia. In the last year alone, we've done 4 Jerry Lewis shows.
Yes.
He's one of my favorite comedians. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he was his own favorite comedian as well. We'll talk about that here in a second. But I love Jerry Lewis's ability to make me laugh. And to make me laugh takes some doing because I'm a hard sell. Mm-hmm. Jerry had that ability to kind of find the little kid in everybody. But he was, as I learned later in life through personal experience with him, he was a dichotomy. He was kind of a wild card when it came to personality, because you never knew which Jerry was going to show up. Let me first introduce your connection to Jerry Lewis. For people who don't know, Rick Sapphire, for many, many years, decades, was the personal manager to Jerry Lewis and knew him probably better than anybody, at least in the business. Now, Rick, once again, welcome to the show. Let's talk about this guy that you called friend and confidant and client, Jerry. Tell me a little bit your involvement with him. Where did it start? How did it begin? And was it love at first sight?
Okay. First of all, I'm going to have to look up the word dichotomy. And once I've done that, now I know what that means. Well, here's the story. My association with Jerry had many different faces. When I was 6 years old, I was introduced to Jerry for the very first time. And that was in 1953. So the audience could now do the math if they'd like. My uncle, his name was Ernie Glucksman. He was my real hero. In 1950, an executive from NBC came to him and said, "Look, we've got a team. We've got him on the radio now. We want to bring him over to television, and we would like you to produce and direct all of their television appearances on this new program called the Colgate Comedy Hour." And this is where the term came in that you mentioned a little earlier. They described Martin and Lewis as a smooth Italian singer who is reminiscent of Bing Crosby in voice and Cary Grant in his appearance in nature. And he is teamed up with a monkey. And of course, the monkey was Jerry Lewis.
Absolutely. Sure.
My uncle had a meeting with Martin and Lewis that really was a very bad meeting. Excuse me. it was a bad meeting because Jerry was uncontrollable at the meeting. He was jumping on tables. And this is the way he was releasing his nervous energy. Yeah. Martin and Lewis were on the radio. And of course, by that time, pretty big in nightclubs in 1950. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they became famous was in the late 1940s, CBS came along and stole all of the comedy stars from NBC Radio.
Yes.
They stole them. And NBC needed something to fill in the gap. Mm-hmm. Well, the managers got together and they knew about Martin and Lewis because they were big in nightclubs. And Abby Greshler, who was Martin and Lewis's manager at the time, recommended Dean and Jerry. It turned out they signed them to a radio contract in 1949, I believe.
Yes, sir.
And that contract was a very firm contract, and they wanted them for the radio because they wanted them for the new medium that was coming up, television.
Absolutely.
So my uncle became the executive producer and director of the Colgate Comedy Hour. Early on, around 1951, he married my mother's sister. My mother's sister was Aunt Judy, who at one time, with her ex-husband and ex-partner, was part of a world-famous dance team, Buddy and Judy Allen.
And they
danced, I like to say, all over the world and other places.
And they were
quite something. But now it was Uncle Ernie and Aunt Judy. And I got to know Uncle Ernie when I was very, very young. Mm-hmm. And I guess he took a liking to me. And I wanted to be in show business. I wanted to be a comedian. But I knew full well that at the age of six, nobody's going to listen to a six-year-old talking about his wife and kids. And so I gravitated to magic. I loved performing magic. And and that was my stepping stone into comedy. But Uncle Ernie introduced me to Jerry in the summer of 1953. We were up staying at Brown's Hotel in the Catskills, which I can talk about for hours.
And I'm a Catskill historian, Rick.
Oh,
You kidding me? I love the Borscht Belt. I was all about the Borscht Belt.
Then we might have some interesting things to talk about.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
But strangely enough, mm-hmm. when Uncle Ernie said he was going to introduce me to Jerry Lewis, which I was so excited about because I knew Jerry from you know, we had to watch the Colgate Comedy Hour every Sunday night when Dean and Jerry were on, because at the end of the program, when it said produced and directed by Ernest D. Glucksman, the whole family would sit and clap, you know, so that's why we did that. So Jerry was having lunch by himself at Grossinger's Hotel, which was Brown's Hotel's biggest competition right down the street. And that's where I met Jerry for the first time. And I remember I was with my sister. She came in also. And Jerry was sitting alone at the luncheon table in the beautiful main dining room there. Mm-hmm. And I remember he was eating his prunes and trying to hold them in his mouth while he was being introduced to me. And he stood up when Uncle Ernie said, Jerry, I would like you to meet my nephew, Ricky Sapphire. Jerry stood up. And as he stood up, I remember he kept getting taller and taller and taller. To me, he was about 20 feet tall.
Sure.
Of course, I had only seen him on a 7-inch television screen.
Sure.
And but that was very exciting for me. And the only question that I never asked Jerry, and we spoke about everything over the years, is why he was having lunch at Grossinger's instead of at Brown's.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other issue that maybe we'll get into if the conversation leads to that.
Oh, it will, absolutely.
In the 1960s, and I write about this in my book, The Real Jerry Lewis Story. Mm-hmm. In the 1960s, Jerry surprised me by asking me to be his guest on a television program. And as it turned out, I was Jerry's guest on the panel when Jerry took over for 2 weeks, when he took over The Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 1962 BC, before Carson.
Carson, yes.
Right. And there was a little controversy behind that story also. But the first week that Jerry took over The Tonight Show, during the interim period when Jack Parr left the program and Johnny Carson was going to be the new host,
mm-hmm.
but Johnny had to fill his ABC contract.
Yes.
And so he wasn't going to come on until the beginning of October.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jerry was on for the first week, and it was a sensation. By the end of the first week, both CBS and ABC were approaching my uncle, who was Jerry's manager at the time, to talk about Jerry having his own network TV talk show.
Right.
And early the second week, I was staying at the Essex House in New York with Uncle Ernie and whatever. Uncle Ernie used to kidnap me when he was in New York with Jerry because I was like the son that Uncle Ernie never had. And Jerry came into the room and asked me if I would like to be his guest on The Tonight Show. I was 15 years old, and this was like a dream. I thought it over for about 40 seconds, and I said, of course, I'd love to do it.
Absolutely.
And he said, okay, you're not going to be scripted, but let's have some conversation. And we talked, and if I said something that he liked, he said, try to remember that if I ask you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was on The Tonight Show with Jerry on the very last Friday that he hosted that 2 weeks. That night was the most watched Tonight Show to that date. And that record was broken in, I think, 1969, when Tiny Tim and Miss Vicky got married. And that was a bigger audience. So that's kind of,
I know the guy who set that up, by the way.
Oh, is that right?
I do. He's been a guest on the show, Stephen Plim.
Oh, very nice. Tiny Tim, that's another spoiler. I could talk about Tiny Tim. I won't do, because he was one of those performers like Georgie Jessel, who I love, and we were good friends.
God,
people would hear
Postmaster General,
if somebody was coming to a hotel and the star on Saturday night was Georgie Jessel, the immediate reaction was, oh no, do we have to listen to him preaching, blah, 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 blah. Well, by the time his show was over, Georgie Jessel would get the most incredible standing ovations because he knew how to work an audience. He was amazing.
Oh my God, he was brilliant. Brilliant, Rick. He was brilliant.
Absolutely agree. He was amazing. So was Tiny Tim. We had him at a resort where I was performing, and I saw him do his hour and 10-minute show. And he worked that audience. It was amazing. And Jerry knew how to work an audience, too. But Jerry had other issues with audiences.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. I mentioned the word dichotomy at the beginning of the show. One of the things that I experienced, and I'll tell my story later on, but one of the things that Jerry's known for is his quick wit, but his quick temper as well. And they were often a razor's edge apart from each other. He did not like anyone that was funnier than he. That I witnessed that. I saw that. He didn't like anybody funnier than himself. And he took great exception to and great lengths to put people down when it suited him. Your dealing with him was multifaceted. You had to see that other side, the dark side of the clown, as we were calling it in our previous programs. The dark side of the clown, this other side of this brilliant, you know, thinking on his feet all the time kind of guy. And he was, no question about it, absolutely superb at delivering ad-libs on the spot. But he had a hair trigger, Rick, and I want to hear about that. How did you deal with that?
Well, first of all, I spent a lot of time with Jerry as a kid when he was appearing in New York. Every time he came to New York to appear on a television program, the three telethons that he did, I was there. I even worked at those telethons. The first one was with Dean and Jerry. That was their last TV appearance together. I write about that whole thing. It was a very emotional program. But I saw the way he treated people. I saw the way my uncle told me one thing. He said, you know, Ricky, he said, part of my job is to protect Jerry Lewis from his fans and to protect his fans from Jerry Lewis. Right. And that's the way he was. Now, when people ask me, about Jerry's wit and sense of humor, I sometimes have to challenge the question. And I could do the same with you. Not that I'm trying to challenge you, but...
Oh, please, I'm open for a dialogue. Absolutely.
Can you tell me three of the funniest things you ever heard Jerry say? Time's
up. Yeah, I actually can.
All right. Oh, I'd like to hear it.
And one was as simple as... Hey, lady.
Yeah, he never said that. Actually,
I know Jerry, that. And but that's when you was when you hear that expression,
right?
Especially if they do it in a Lewis-esque voice,
right?
The first thing you think of is Jerry. And we, you and I both know he never said that. But it struck me as hilarious when I heard it.
Well,
that's number one. The second thing. The second funniest thing I ever heard him say was, my real name is Joseph Levitch.
Well,
because I knew this by that point. I knew the story. I knew the truth. And it wasn't Joseph Levitch. It was Jerome Levitch.
Mm-hmm.
And Joseph and Jerome are two very different names and they mean very different things.
Right.
Okay. That was the second. The third funniest thing I ever heard him say was an apology to a reporter that he clearly didn't mean because he was rolling his eyes when he did it. And that struck me as cutting, brilliant, condescending, over the top. And it was a plethora of emotions that I thought, but I thought to myself, that's some funny shit. That he could do that with a straight face and get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's brilliant. But there you go.
Okay, well, that's good. It doesn't necessarily lend itself to entertainment. The interview that you talked about, was that one of his last interviews when he was...
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
It sure was. Yes, sir.
Well, I believe that, first of all, Jerry thought that it would be funny. I think everybody who's interviewed, mm-hmm. including myself, I remember doing an interview many, many, many years ago in Pennsylvania. The young lady was Kathy Armbruster, and she had a morning talk show. And at that time, I was representing Spanky McFarland and the stars of The Little Rascals, now grown up, and we did a nostalgia tour in the colleges.
Right.
And she asked me to be on her 7 o'clock in the morning television program. Mm-hmm. And of course, I wanted to do it. And I sat there and she gave me this very nice introduction. And then she asked the first question about, you know, Rick, how did you decide to look up Spanky McFarland? And I looked at her and said, Kathy, it's really none of your business. Well, she looked at me and her teeth almost fell out. But within 10 seconds, we both started to laugh.
I love it.
Yeah, because I think everybody who's interviewed to any great extent wants to just do that one time. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that that's what Jerry wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But by that time, he didn't have the timing. And
yeah.
It went south. And he tried to shake up the guy who was interviewing him. And that didn't work. Because the guy was very good.
He he shook him up, Rick. For all the different wrong reasons. I think what he was trying to do, and you know him better than I ever did, because I met him peripherally, briefly for like a fleeting moment, and over the phone I spoke to him. But I think what he was attempting to do was to introduce levity through sarcasm, and he just wasn't. You know, sarcasm is an art form. If you do sarcasm right, it's hilarious. Mm-hmm. But it can also come out sounding very condescending and very mean.
That's why there were only two. There were only two comedians who really did sarcasm well, and that, of course, was Don Rickles. But before Don Rickles, it was the guy who invented that, and that was Jackie Leonard.
Oh, God, Fat Jackie Leonard. Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. And they knew how to do it. And they knew how to do it with love. And you're right. Jerry tried to do that. It didn't work. But on the other hand, Jerry, all through his career, would say anything to the press that might make headlines for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that point of his career, you know, it was almost over. He really did not have a career in entertainment anymore, sadly.
Yeah.
Because he lost his funny, which is very sad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jerry once said to me that, you know, you get older, your image changes and all. And I didn't buy that. You know, Jerry and I had some very deep conversations. Stan Laurel could have been 99 and a half years old, but he would still be the character and he would still be lovable.
Well, let's talk about that. Boy, you walked me right into that one. Let's talk about that. I believe, and this is, again, my observational opinion, having been a fan and still a fan of today, and I'll not ever deny that to anyone. I think if I were to pinpoint the moment that he lost his funny, it had to be around 1967, 68, right around 67, 68, when he started doing movies that took on less of a humorous take on them and more of a political and satirical take. For example, Which Way to the Front? Mm-hmm. Films like that. That wasn't funny. That was a dig. That was a poke.
Mm-hmm.
That whole film was a poke. And if you guys out there, if you don't understand what I mean in entertainment terms of what a poke is, Google it. You'll understand right away. Rick knows what I'm talking about. Well, let's talk about that. When do you think he lost the funny, the quote-unquote funny?
Well, when he lost his funny lost the people who helped make his career what it was.
Yeah.
1965, his 1965, his contract with Paramount ended. My uncle Ernie Glucksman, after being with Jerry through all of his great years, moved on. Part of that was due to the debacle of the Jerry Lewis Live 2-hour Saturday night television program that he took on, and was so ill prepared that it was canceled after the first episode, but finally went off the air 14 weeks later. Yeah. Some people will say, now, wait a minute, it was only on for 13 weeks. That's true. There were only 13 episodes, but sadly, President Kennedy was assassinated during that run, and one week he wasn't on the air, so it went 14, 14th week.
Rick, but would you, let me ask you a question, because we're right there, we're right there. Would you agree with the following statement? I've heard the argument made for this. Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. There would not have been a Martin and Lewis without Jerry Lewis, but there not there would not have been a Jerry Lewis without Dean Martin. Can you shed some light on that? The inference being, Dean Martin created the team. Dean Martin, quote unquote, made Jerry Lewis the monkey.
Okay. Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, as a, as an act, were invented by Abner J. Greshler. Mm-hmm. Abby Greshler was a theatrical representative, and he signed Jerry, who was doing his record mime act at the time, and he was well aware of Dean Martin. But there would not have been a Martin and Lewis if there wasn't Gene and Dick Wesson, the Wesson brothers, because the Martin and Lewis act was stolen from the Wesson brothers.
Absolutely.
At the advice and urging of Abby Greshler.
That's now, the story. Abby Greshler
had the Wesson brothers, and Abby Greshler, his big forte was presenting corporate shows. In those days, Sears and all the big Gimbels and all these big businesses, they would run an annual show, not only over the holidays, but at any time. And they would do these comedy productions, and sometimes they'd bring in outside acts. Well, the Wesson brothers, and Dick Wesson, I know his daughter. I talk to his daughter all the time. Mm-hmm. Dick Wesson was the inventor of the squeaky Jerry Lewis voice and many of the things they did. I mean, they did Sonny Boy before Jerry ever did it with his son, Gary.
Yeah.
But the Wesson brothers, Abby Greshler could only get you to a certain plateau.
Sure.
And the Wesson brothers felt it was time to go Hollywood.
Yeah.
And Dick Wesson eventually became a great director and writer for TV. And
oh, absolutely.
But
absolutely.
But it was time now. They wanted to move on. Abby Greshler needed an act. Mm-hmm. And that's where he sent Jerry out to watch the Wesson brothers perform as often as he could, mostly for shows that Abby got the Wesson brothers, and Jerry took notes, and Jerry learned the jokes. Mm-hmm. And then when Jerry got together with the guy who really introduced them to the to the New York audience, Angel Lopez, the story about the 500 Club, which was actually the 500 Cafe. Sure. The 500 Club and Skinny D'Amato. Mm-hmm. It's fabricated. And that's what readers will learn in the real Jerry Lewis story. It all happened with Angel Lopez. Martin and Lewis worked together.
The story that January, I heard.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. The story that I heard is that the Atlantic City 500, quote unquote, 500 Club story was fabricated to create a Hollywood legend. It was fabricated to create a story. Where did you start? Well, this is where we started at.
Well, Dean had a nice little bag. Dean had an interesting background.
Mm-hmm.
He worked in the coal mines, and he was a croupier and all that stuff. We've all heard those stories. Jerry did not have a career. He put together his record act, not in the Catskill Mountains, not at Brown's Hotel, but at the Hotel Arthur in Lakewood, New Jersey, that Charles and Lillian Brown were managing. And Lillian Brown's daughter, Lonnie, who is still with us, almost 100 years old and just God a dear bless. Friend.
Wow.
Lonnie invented the Record Act for Jerry, because she used to like to stand in front of her mirror at the hotel and mouth records, and Jerry joined her. And that's how that got, created.
Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I get to too,
I don't know, brother,
focused on any subject, you're all night long. Interrupt me.
No,
I could sit here and listen to you all night long, but Amelia is giving me that look like, can I ask him a question?
Oh, Amelia, you can ask. And Amelia, for those tuning in, there's a little technical thing where I'm having trouble hearing Amelia. Mm-hmm. So if I can't hear Amelia, maybe you can translate for me.
Okay. I'll do like this sign language.
Yeah, do it. That's good. You know what you just said? I don't even want to mention it. Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mel.
Out of all the celebrities that he's managed, is there one that he's not managed that he would want to manage?
Okay. I don't think I caught every word. I think you're asking me how I became so incredibly handsome. Was that your question?
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Angelo, can you? Yeah, I
sure. What Amelia wants to know is, of all the people that you've managed, what were your favorite person to manage? Amelia, I got that basically right. Yeah.
And is there anyone that he would like to manage that still he had not managed?
And is there anyone that if you could do it again, would you would manage now?
Jerry was the most important. And I loved Jerry for his work. Mm-hmm. I knew him too well. You know, I always say to people, if you're going to love your heroes, love them for their work. Because, you know, they all have feet of clay and they're people just like us, and they do have the downsides, and I've known the downsides. And by the way, I still am personal manager to Jerry's firstborn son, and I should say Patty and Jerry's firstborn son, Gary Lewis of Gary Lewis and the Playboys.
Gary Lewis and the Playboys, this diamond ring, among other hits.
And Many people don't even know that Gary was Jerry's son, because Gary in the beginning didn't make a big deal about it.
Right.
The secret from Jerry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Gary Lewis and the Playboys back in the day never gave any mention of Jerry Lewis. He wanted to be, Gary Lewis wanted to be Gary Lewis, not Gary Lewis, Jerry Lewis's kid.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There was a couple other guys, Dean Martin, Lucy and Desi's kid. There were a bunch of them that had, like, you know, changed their names because of who their parents were. Well, let's talk about this. It's really important, and I want to get into it. There's a lot to cover. That's why, in the interest of full disclosure, ladies and gentlemen, when Rick and I spoke a couple weeks ago, I told him this was going to be at least a 2 or 3-parter, because we're just getting warmed up. And the second one's going to be in person. I promise and Rick are going to sit at a diner somewhere and do this interview.
That'll be a lot of fun. Yeah. We'll go to Ponzo's. They have great prime
ribs there. I want to talk about
this.
It's really important. Back in the day, there were a couple of guys named Duke Mitchell and Sammy Petrillo.
Oh, God.
Let's talk about him. The legend, the rumor, the speculation. What was the feeling? We already know Dean Martin was okay with it, Jerry, but apparently Jerry had issues with it. So what was the issue?
Okay, yeah, I don't know if you know. I eventually managed Sammy Petrillo.
I didn't know you were Sammy's manager.
Autograph shows and such.
I never knew. Sure.
Oh, yeah. And we were very dear friends. And towards the end of Sammy's life, which sadly was towards the end of Jerry's life, we went to see Jerry. But that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
Sammy Petrillo had a curse. His curse was that he looked, sounded exactly like Jerry without trying.
I know.
That's who he was.
It was frightening. Yes.
Dean, first of all, you know, they were, Sammy was on the Colgate Comedy Hour.
Yeah.
With Martin, in a very brief little, I guess we could call it a cameo appearance. Mm-hmm. Although you really only make a cameo when you're famous. But Sammy was on there, and it was a very effective, very short little bit that he did. But Jerry did something to Sammy. I'm going to stop for 1 minute.
Sure.
People ask me, why am I writing this book? As a tell-all, as a because I'm angry at Jerry? None of those reasons. With all of Jerry's personal failures, sadly, mm-hmm. I think the real story of how he could take whatever was inside of him and turn it into a comedic character that for the next 100 years will be giving people laughs and enjoyment, that story needs to be told. Because the real story of Jerry's beginnings and the Wesson brothers and all these things that nobody knows about, essentially, is far more interesting than the made-up story that, you know, Jerry wrote on a paper bag some comedy lines, and Dean was so smart that he learned them so fast, and that's how they be. None of that is true.
It's a good story. It makes for a great story. Sadly, it's not true. Right. But again, it makes for showbiz legend. And as they say, when the rumor is greater than the fact, print the rumor.
Yeah.
Am I lying? That's it.
No. You're right. And where I was going before I stopped myself was that Jerry had no interesting background. Mm-hmm. Jerry got a record act. Abby Greshler was introduced to Jerry by Jerry's dad, Danny, who I knew quite well. Abby Greshler looked at Jerry, saw the record act. He didn't think that Jerry had any future as a record mime.
Right.
Because those vaudeville type acts were a dime a dozen, and they were quickly fading.
Yeah.
But he wanted to put him together with somebody to do the Wesson Brothers act.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too, Rick, again, in show business, in entertainment in general, there's very little original.
Very little original.
I knew a guy, Andy Kaufman, who basically did Jerry Lewis. He did the record act.
Right.
Okay. So, one stole it from another to another. But, he parlayed that into a television career and Taxi and whatever. Sadly, died way too young.
Right.
But the gift was there. The gift for talent was there. You either have the gift or you don't. What you do with it, how you waste it, or how you utilize it is completely up to you.
You're absolutely right.
Let us talk about Jerry with regards to the human element. We already know he's a brilliant entertainer. He's a funny guy. He knows what works for him, and he sticks to it.
Well, what you just said is a key. He knows what works for him, or knew what worked for him at the time. People ask me always, Rick, do you think that Jerry Lewis was a genius? And my answer, very honestly, is yes. He was a genius at writing, producing, directing, acting in Jerry Lewis movies.
Exactly.
That's where it stopped, though, because he did not have the patience and maybe not even the skill to, Alfred Hitchcock produced a lot of different kinds of movies with a lot of different kinds of stars and wrote movies. Jerry was for Jerry. But sadly, two things happened to Jerry. Number one, he matured physically. So he no longer looked like the gawky, crazy little kid who would evoke sympathy from people.
Yeah.
By his appearance, he became a very good looking guy. And the age difference between him and Dean, that kind of disappeared. They looked about the same age.
Sure.
At a certain point. Mm-hmm. And the tastes and trends in comedy changed. So they would, Jerry said to me, I remember we were in a hotel room in Berlin, Germany, and we were talking about Martin and Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, Jerry, how long do you think it would have continued? He said, maybe a year or two. He said, because what we were doing, the people weren't buying it anymore.
No.
He said, we had really, and that's the same thing that happened with Jerry in the mid to the later 1960s. He didn't look the part of a crazy kid anymore.
And that's why, and Rick, that's why I mentioned to you earlier that I can pinpoint that to 1967, 68. And you're right there with me now. You're right there with me. And that's when it happened. It was no longer the slapstick, you know, irreverent.
That's right. That era was gone.
Yeah. And people were doing different things. And if he had stopped at that, I would have been a happy camper if I never saw another Jerry Lewis movie. But then he did something like only you have to do in Hollywood because you never say never. He went ahead and did another movie called Hardly Working.
Yeah.
And that's when he crucified his career.
And his marriage. Career
died.
And his marriage.
And his marriage. Yeah. They both died with that movie.
Yeah.
Tell everybody what happened, Rick. You and I both know what happened.
Well, Hardly Working, it was an attempt for Jerry to resurrect his career. But he tried to go back to, he tried to go back to the early Jerry Lewis.
Yeah.
Which he couldn't do because the character was not timeless. Like I go back to Stan Laurel or even the Lou Costello. Lou Costello could have been in his 90s and still played that same goofy little guy because his character was timeless. Jerry's wasn't.
Right.
But he wanted to do another movie. He got some money together. And the movie was, destined to failure. There were some moderately funny things. And for the Jerry Lewis fans, you know, it's like going to an old timers baseball game.
Yeah.
You know, you don't expect any of them to hit a home run, but just to see him get up at the bat and give it a try.
That movie, if he attempted to swing the bat in that movie, I would have had more respect for him. He didn't even attempt to swing the bat. Even if he struck out anyway, but look. Oh my God. Amelia, question for Rick Sapphire, entertainment manager.
Yes, of course. Absolutely. I see that here that you have a magic shop or had a magic shop at one time.
Angela, please repeat it for me because
yes. She wants to know about your magic shop. She's a fan of magic and she wants to know about how long did you have your magic shop?
Okay. by the way, when I was on the Tonight Show with Jerry, I was, a teenage comedy magician, and I did a magic trick on the program with him.
Let you in on a little secret, Rick. I saw that clip.
Which one?
Of you with Jerry on the Tonight Show.
Oh yeah. I was younger and skinnier that time, and
we all were.
Yeah, the magic shop. I love magic. And in 1980, by the way, my wife, Sheila, who's my co-author on the book, she's the one with the education. I'm the one who lived the story. And it works out together. So 1980, we were expecting a baby. And I decided that at that time I was performing as a stand-up comedian, although I can argue with what that means, a stand-up comedian. But anyway, I was doing comedy and doing a bunch of traveling and representing celebrities. And I decided for at least the first couple of years, I wanted to be a real father and stay at home. Mm-hmm. And we talked it over and said, well, what would you like to do home? I said, well, maybe if I opened up a little magic shop. I love magic so much. And I know the business backwards and forwards.
Sure.
So for a year and a half, 2 years until the baby maybe starts school, then I go back on the road again. The magic shop was in existence for 41 years.
Wow.
And what finally closed us was COVID. because in our store here in Cherry Hill, we had a theater. We did birthday parties. I entertained. I had other magicians come.
Oh, man.
And it was great fun, and it was wonderful. But COVID came along, and, you know, you couldn't have people come up close to the counter and help them and demonstrate magic tricks that they would buy. And we helped a lot of kids. And maybe one day I'll do it again. I should live so long. But that was the history of the magic shop.
If you need a magic assistant, I'm here. I'm like 10 minutes away.
He could do it for your birthday in July. Yeah, I'll be there.
But I've got some assistants that probably have better legs than you. So
yeah, I'm sure you do.
So I might. But gee, thanks for the. Don't call me. I'll call you. Thanks for the offer. But no, magic was a great part of my life. And Jerry loved magic too. You know.
Sure.
The same year I was on the Tonight Show with Jerry, a book came out. Jerry Lewis's magic tricks. He had nothing to do with the book, but he did play a magician the movie he did as a solo. Geisha Boy.
The Geisha Boy. Yeah.
And he was a very poor magician in that movie. Mm-hmm. But we had a lot of fun. We did car tricks for each other. And Jerry was a fan of magic.
Yep, he played the great Mr. Woolley.
Mr. Woolley, yeah.
Yeah, remember? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, man, this has been a fast hour. Rick, why don't we talk a little bit about, because we just barely skimmed the surface of the book. There's so much. This man who encapsulized so much of our life, he's been around forever, and we lost him just recently, you know, a couple of years ago. But you know, you're talking about a guy that's been around since the 40s to the 2017, you know, and then, you know, all of a sudden he's gone, but his legacy is just now. We're starting to realize the impact of his legacy.
Sure.
Clearly, was he a comedic genius? You could define genius in any way you want. To me, he was a comedic genius. But what the genius to me, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, the genius to me is that he had an impeccable sense of timing. He knew what to do and when to do it. That was his genius to me. It was a simple, elegant genius. What to do and when. It's all about timing. That I will say. But as a human being, you're talking about a guy who was really, again, he had this other side that people, we can't ignore that. And I'm hoping that when you come back for part two, which I hope that you will.
Oh, I'll be happy to.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate that. We definitely, I want to talk about, how do I want to say it? I want to put a human face. Mm-hmm. On Jerome Levitch, mm-hmm. because Jerome Levitch and Jerry Lewis are two different people, and contrary to what people believe, even Jerry himself, when asked, said that his name was Joseph Levitch, and it's not. It never was, and it was never legally changed, by the way, so people want to know that. Jerry Lewis's name was never legally changed. It was always Jerome Levitch.
Yeah, that's correct.
Where did he pull the Jerry from? The Jerry, well, Jerry, you know, Jerome is Jerry, but where did he get the Lewis from? Where did that come from?
Lewis? Well, his dad was Danny Lewis. Levitch, but he was a professional entertainer, singer, and MC and host, and he was Danny Lewis.
Yeah, it came from his dad then. Okay, Danny Lewis. Danny Lewis was a hell of a singer.
He was a wonderful. Danny was a wonderful singer, a very smooth performer.
Yeah.
Jerry's mother, I was in love with Patty. I knew her quite well. We used to go to lunch when they were in New York, and Jerry had his business things. She used to take me to lunch to the Stage Delicatessen and introduce me to people. And boy, I've just felt sober. I was 16 at the time, and she was a heartthrob to me. I loved her. She raised Jerry's children, And a good thing she was there. But also an excellent performer. I like to say that Jerry Lewis was one of a show business dynasty that now goes back about 100 years. There was Danny Lewis and Ray Lewis, Danny's wife. She was his pianist, and Danny was a singer, and so on and so forth. There was Patty Lewis, who sang with the Ted Fiorito Orchestra, and also with the Jimmy Dorsey Orchestra. And then there was Jerome Levitch, who changed his name to Jerry Lewis. And then there was Gary Lewis, who followed Jerry. You know, Jerry wanted to have a hit record, and he did have a hit record with Rockabye Your Baby.
Yes.
It did not reach number one, but it was on the charts for several weeks and was in the top 10. Yep. Then Jerry's son comes along, and the first 7 songs that Gary Lewis and the Playboys recorded were in the top 10.
They shot right to the top.
It took Dean Martin 17 years to get his 7th song into the top 10.
Right.
And Gary's music still holds up today.
It sure hell does. It's great music. Look, I don't care the decade. I don't care the genre of music. If it's good music, it's good music. You know, yes. I still love, here you go. I'm 65, all right? I'm 65.
I have no sympathy for you.
God bless me, right? I still love Al Jolson singing Avalon.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so where is my head? Okay,
so your head is where it should be. You like that style of
music. Yeah, you know, it's great music.
When you talk about the big bands, nostalgia, whatever, some people look at you and say, well, that's old stuff. How can you listen to it? But look at how many people like classical music, which is hundreds of years old, and you love classical music. People respect you. It's just a matter of what you like.
I love the fact that you got bands like Trans-Siberian Orchestra taking those old classics and putting a beat to them and making it, you know, contemporary.
Yeah.
They don't. Most people don't know that they're listening to something that's 200 years old.
They don't really.
Yeah, Rick, I'll tell you what, my friend, you have an amazing pedigree. Let's tell everybody, Rick Sapphire Celebrity Management is located at Box 2903 Cherry Hill, New Jersey, 08003. If you are seeking representation and if Rick feels like you got the goods.
Now, wait a minute. Well, hold on. I always tell people when they've contacted me, I'm a very lazy manager because I only represent people who are already famous.
There you go.
So that makes it, you know, they do all the work and then I come along and they represent them. By the way, if I may take a moment about the book, The Real Jerry Lewis Story.
Yes, sir.
It's going to be published. It's going to hit the stores and hit the internet on May 28th of this year. And it will be available on Amazon Books. There'll be a soft cover edition that they can buy, or the, you know, the electronic version. And if anybody would like for me to put them on a reminder list or make a comment, I'm going to give you my email address, if I may.
Absolutely.
And it's pretty simple. It's Rick at, then my name, Rick Sapphire, RickSapphire.com. And you can drop me a note and I'll put you on a list to let you know exactly when the book is coming out. I got a couple of little bits of memorabilia to show you. Remember we talked about Abby Greshler?
Yes.
This is the back of a photograph. Oh. This was Jerry Lewis's personal manager, RKO building.
And RKO, the Radio City. Wow.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. The other side of this is Jerry Lewis's first professional.
Oh, wow.
His first headshot.
Wow.
And
remarkable.
There's the photographer.
Wow.
And Kohler, huh?
But you see that? That's who Jerry was.
Yes.
That serious person. My friend Lonnie, who created the Record Act and was a lifelong friend of Jerry's.
Yeah.
She said to me, you know, because she knew him when he was 14, 15, 16.
Right.
And she said she never liked to go see Jerry Lewis movies. She said because Jerry acted like an idiot in the movies, which, of course, was his bread and butter at the time.
Absolutely.
And she said, but that wasn't Jerry. And that's part of the anger. Excuse me. I'm getting that cough perfected now. Jerry's problem was he didn't love that character.
Yeah.
He had the child inside of him. But yeah. When people say, oh, Jerry, I love you in this movie and that movie, when you crossed your eyes and you felt, that's not what Jerry wanted to be loved for. He wanted to be loved for his intelligence.
The other of the coin, Rick, is that there are those who criticize that Jerry took himself too seriously. Well, can you either confirm that or squash the rumor that he took himself too seriously? I know he was quite a bit of a narcissist. That's a given. But
I don't know if he took himself too seriously.
Right.
He was a funny guy. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference between a comic and a comedian. And I'll explain it quickly so we don't run over time. The difference between a comic and a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
A comic says funny things. Alan King
was
a great comic. Says funny things. What's his name? Seinfeld. It was a great comic.
Yep.
Says funny things.
Yes, sir.
A comedian says things funny.
Funny. Yes, sir.
So you could go see Seinfeld and watch him for 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could go see Jerry Lewis in person live and watch his show. And when it's over, somebody will say, what did Seinfeld say? And you could rattle off maybe five or six of the jokes he told. And then they'll ask you, well, what did Jerry Lewis say? I don't know, but he was as funny as hell.
Yeah, I have no idea, but it was funny as shit.
Right.
Yeah.
You'll eat those words one day. Exactly. And so, Jerry.
I probably did already.
You probably did. Jerry was a master at, he knew his body, he knew what he looked like, and he was a master of the stage. There's so many things I could tell you about that he did that was genius very quickly. On one of the Colgate Comedy Hours, which you could Google and watch, Jerry, Dean, and Dick Stabile, their conductor, were having an argument, a fake argument, but they're having an argument.
Oh, sure.
And Dean says, this is my Italian buddy, Dick Stabile, and they got into a fight, and they pushed Jerry. Jerry falls down on the ground. And Dick Stabile and Jerry are now talking to each other, and Jerry's laying on the ground with his hand on the microphone stand. And when Dick is live television, when Dick Stabile is talking, Jerry is turning his hand to turn the microphone to Dick Stabile. And when Dean starts to talk, Jerry is turning the microphone to Dean, so they could both be heard. Jerry was in control and knew the stage. He knew what the audience was looking at.
Absolutely. And
for that, I will say he was a genius for Jerry Lewis things.
Yeah. My guest, ladies and gentlemen, is and will be again, Rick Saffire, celebrity manager to the stars and personal friend and manager of Jerry Lewis, the one and only, the American icon. I'll tell you what, man. You have at least three Jerry books in you. At least three. I know you got two for sure, but you've got a third one for sure in there. You've got at least three books in you.
We're working on a book also, Gary Lewis, but Gary Lewis and the Playboys, retrospective, a coffee table. But this is the 60th this year, the 60th anniversary of Gary Lewis and the Playboys.
And the Playboys,
amazing.
That's a scary thought, man.
Yeah.
That's a scary thought. That's just like emphasizing my age for sure.
Yeah.
Amelia, what do we got coming up? Tell everybody what we got.
Tomorrow night we have Bobby Candle on our show.
A tribute to the Rat Pack. Bobby Candle will be here. and his tribute. He's actually, you'll like this, Rick. Bobby Candle is a Dean Martin tribute artist.
Uh-huh.
And he's put together a Rat Pack tribute with Jerry Lewis, Marilyn Monroe, Frank, and Sammy, and Dean, of course.
You know, Jerry Lewis was never part of the Rat Pack.
Yeah, and you know, here's the funny thing about that. I'm glad you said that. Mm-hmm. Because almost every Rat Pack tribute I've seen has a Jerry lookalike.
Yeah.
Including Angelo Capone.
I know.
Yeah.
I like Andrew. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Oh, I love Andrew. He's a great guy. What else we got, Mel?
In one of your favorites. Why don't you tell everybody about Wednesday?
Oh, wait a minute. We have,
that's what you have to tell.
I can't make this up, folks. I cannot make this up. You know, we get a lot of emails from people saying, you know, you got to check this person out. You got to check that person out. Have this person as a guest. Mm-hmm. I got one. This is like a cake topper, okay? Yes. Kenny Presley will be my guest Wednesday. Well, you're saying to yourself, who the hell is Kenny Presley? Well, if you believe him, he is the son of Elvis Presley and stepbrother to Elvis Presley Jr. Who is Elvis Presley Jr.? Another guy who claims that Elvis Presley is his father. They both have, can't make this stuff up, folks. I wish I could make this up.
No.
I can't. They've got the DNA, court certified DNA, and they have permission from the courts to call themselves Presley. Here's the funny thing about it, Rick. Graceland is letting them do it.
Yeah.
Okay, Graceland is letting them do it. Now, you would think if they have a problem with this, they got a legal team that's second to none. They've got incredible attorneys at Graceland. But they're letting these guys do it. Either they know something we don't, or we just stumbled upon a couple of crackpots here.
I think they probably will let them do it because it will now help to resurrect Elvis Presley again.
Yeah, because
we're at a time in history now where Elvis Presley is a very long time ago.
Yeah,
almost 50 years. Sure. Yeah. Here's a little trivia. And Amelia's husband Jeff used to work for Elvis at Graceland.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. All right, Amelia, I got to say goodnight to Rick Sapphire. Rick, my friend, and I say that with due respect in my heart, you're my friend now. This is, you are no longer a guest. You're part of the family. Yes. I will have you back. And next time we will get together, we'll have a little lunch and do an interview. How about that?
That sounds good. I'd love to do it. Sounds like
beautiful.
Fun.
Very on behalf good. Of Rick Sapphire, the book is The Real Jerry Lewis. On behalf of Amelia, the Pitbull Chapman. I am the Mad Dog, Angelo DiCiprio. We will see you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on What's the Buzz, America's Best Podcast. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.